Are we waiting for anybody else? Doesn't look like it. Let me just find my site plan. All right, I'm going to call to order this hearing. Again, this is April 25. I'm Thurston County Hearing Examiner Sharon Rice, and this hearing is in regards to project number 2021-106455. This project is known as the Deskins Grand Mound Preliminary Plat and Variance. The property is at 6411 198th Avenue Southwest in Rochester, unincorporated Thurston County, Washington. Anybody who needs to get my attention, you can call me Examiner Rice or Ms. Rice. Just very quickly, I'll remind folks, please do keep your audio muted when you're not testifying. Please make sure your cell phones are turned off when you are testifying. And just like the previous matter, at the end of this hearing, I will hold the record open for 2 business days for public comment from people who had technology problems participating today. That creates the same graduated hearing decision issuance deadline. We'll go over that at the end of this hearing. Before today's hearing, I was provided with a staff report so that I could review it and be familiar with the proposal. I want to acknowledge those documents for the record. At Exhibit 1 is that staff report. And attached to it are attachments A through Z, and then Z1 through Z10. I did review those documents. They are admitted. I don't believe there is any other pre-hearing information that has been submitted to me. If so, please, Ms. Garner, correct me when you testify. Again, I'm going to be asking folks, when you speak, to please unmute, state and spell your name, give me your title, or name your relationship to the case so I know how to identify you in the findings, and then allow me to swear you in. And with that, I think we're ready to proceed. Ms. Garner, if you want to do that for us, unmute, state and spell your name, give me your job title, and allow me to swear you in.
Yes, good morning. Lacey Garner, Associate Planner for Thurston County, LACYGARNER.
Thank you very much. If I could ask you to raise your right hand.
Yes.
Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Nice to see you again. Please go
Thank
ahead.
Thank you. So not to repeat too much of what you've already gone over, we're reviewing the Deskins Grand Mound Preliminary Plat and Variance application. The applicant is Ryan Deskins, and the representative is Fuller Designs. Cassie Fuller is the point of contact that I've been directing my communications with most recently. The request is the applicant proposes to subdivide 1.62 acres into 7 single family residential lots. The parcel currently contains 1 single family residence on a water well and with a septic system. The proposal is to retain the existing residence on one lot, create 6 additional lots for new family residences, and to decommission the current well and septic system serving the existing residence to have all 7 lots on Grand Mound public water and sewer. The project proposes a private paved road for access to all the proposed lots. The parcel is zoned residential, 3 to 6 dwellings per acre, and is in the Grand Mound urban growth area. The applicants are also requesting approval of a variance from Thurston County Code 20.07.030, which is the minimum yards required for building setbacks. For the corner lot of the applicant's preliminary plat proposal, the public road facing corner lot contains the existing home, which the applicants are proposing to retain. The minimum yard setback requirement for the existing house to the proposed flanking private road right-of-way is 10 feet. Applicants are requesting a variance to reduce this 100% to 0 or less than 2. There's been 2 different representations for that, with a relative reduction of the proposed easement access around this house from 40 feet to 30 feet. The property is surrounded by single family properties in all directions, some that fit the current zoning and others that remain on larger parcel sizes, averaging approximately 1 acre per single family residence. The property is accessed by 198th Way Southwest, which is a county managed road. The property is flat and covered in grass with several trees near property lines and contains an existing single family residence, as we mentioned. The application was reviewed pursuant to CEPA requirements. During the review process, the Nisqually and Squaxin Island tribes requested a cultural resources survey to be completed as a condition of permitting and prior to development and building permit approval. The applicants provided that assessment and that was forwarded to the tribes and they responded with acceptance and no further comments. As continuing on in the environmental evaluation, the project expects to remove the several trees on the property to build a private road and plant several new ones, though there is not an approved landscaping plan to date. The project proposes to bring in clean fill as required. Water runoff, including stormwater, should not be an issue if the project adheres to the 60% maximum impervious surface acre per lot as required. And a determination of non-significance was issued and no comments have been received on that. The initial proposal at the time of notification was for 8 total lots, which was later reduced to 7 so the project could meet minimum lot size requirements. Shall I go through my CPED department analysis now, Examiner Rice?
Sure, although I do have some clarifying questions about your testimony so far.
Sure.
You stated in writing and in your testimony that they are requesting a variance to reduce the setback 100% to 0 with a relative reduction of the proposed access easement around this house from 40 to 30. So just to clarify, the access easement is proposed to be 40 feet wide, except for adjacent to the residence.
Except for adjacent to the existing residence, it would be reduced to 30 feet is okay. The proposal.
Okay. Okay. I think with that, I'll just have you go through your analysis and I'll get the other questions in as if
sure. You answer them. Sure. And before I forget really quickly, with your initial request, there is an attachment Z11.
Okay.
That I'm sorry was missed somehow. It's the pre-submission conference planning notes that this project had to go through that the planner that did that pre-submission conference at the time provided, and that was dated July 29th, 2021. And I can get you a copy of that.
You know what? I have that. And for some reason, I just didn't announce it. It's here.
Okay. Yes. All right. Great.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Carrying along with the planning department analysis, the density requirements, the proposal adheres to density requirements, adheres to minimum lot width, minimum lot size, maximum building height. They state that no buildings will be over 25 feet in height. But then there are a couple of areas where things remain unclear for the planning department based on a lack of information. So I'll go into those now. Or rather, I'll start with the variance request for this setback, which falls under minimum yard requirements. As it states, the single family structures must be 10 feet from right of way of private roads. And so lot one with the existing single family residence does not adhere to that. The project proposes less than 2 feet of setback from the private road right of way to the existing house, which places the existing house directly adjacent to the proposed sidewalk and road. The preliminary plat map shows 1.86 feet of space between the sidewalk and the house, and the variance application map calls out a reduction request to 0. Therefore, this proposal does not meet the zoning ordinance requirement for this, and that is the subject of their variance request. The other lots do meet these requirements.
Okay.
Moving on, maximum coverage by hard surfaces. Staff has requested impervious surface calculations by lot in each of the several rounds of review comments sent to the applicants, beginning with the first one back in February of 2022. Staff has yet to receive these, so is unable to determine if the project meets the zoning ordinance requirement. Staff is concerned about the lack of preliminary impervious surface calculations, along with the lack of acknowledging required driveway and parking areas on the proposed lots. As a recommended condition of preliminary plat approval, staff requests that the applicant be required to show they can meet driveway and parking requirements and the impervious surface limits on each lot for review and approval prior to preliminary plat approval by the hearing examiner. Moving on to additional standards, there are corner lot requirements for landscaping to have a clear vision corner, and in regard to that, a landscaping plan was provided that does not adhere to all of the required design guidelines, including these requirements. And there are two corners of concern for visibility along the private road, in which there are tree plantings proposed, which would not adhere to this regulation. A revised landscaping plan has been requested, but not yet submitted. As a recommended condition of preliminary plat approval, the applicant will be required to submit a final landscape plan for review and approval prior to preliminary plat approval by the hearing examiner. The landscape plan will need to be in compliance with all the the required parts of code.
And Ms. Garner, please help me understand which two corners you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. The one on 198th Avenue. And then I'm not sure how this would exactly be addressed because it's not defined as a corner lot in code precisely, but I have a concern in looking at the plan for the where 200th Avenue turns from the existing subdivision. So the interior corner that comes across from 200th Avenue and comes down to the private road, there are currently trees proposed on that corner as well. And I believe that should just be discussed or okay. evaluated.
So that's the 200th where it enters lot 7?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, carrying on, the parking and loading, chapter 20.44. For single family residential development, a minimum of 2 parking spaces is required per lot. Proposed parking areas have been requested but not yet provided, hence the requirements of this chapter cannot be verified. Again, staff is concerned about the lack of preliminary impervious surface calculations along with the required parking requirements on relatively small lots. As a recommended condition of preliminary plat approval, staff requests that the applicant be required to show that they can meet parking requirements and impervious surface limits on each lot for review and approval prior to preliminary plat approval by the hearing examiner. More landscaping and screening. An incompatible use is defined as, well, I skipped a little section of 20.45 is the landscaping and screening chapter of Thurston County Code. And there are a list of requirements that need to be shown on this landscaping plan, which have not been the existing and proposed parking spaces, driveways, a narrative description and timeline detailing the site prep, installation, and maintenance measures for the landscaping as required. And then going on to incompatible uses. An incompatible use, this project fits the definition in this chapter of an incompatible use, which is a proposed residential subdivision lot that is less than 50% of the square footage of an existing contiguous residential lot. So to the west of the proposed subdivision are 2 large lots. So that's how this project qualifies there. They do have the chance to request a variance to reduce the buffer. And I suggested that they do that here and now. Screening between incompatible uses, screening shall be a 30-foot wide buffer containing the following, and then there's a list of requirements for that I'll skip for now because it's in writing and in code and here. And as I mentioned previously, a revised landscaping plan has been requested repeatedly that addresses this section of code and the vision clearance triangle, and this is yet to be received. I believe that the project will have difficulty meeting the 30-foot buffer requirement of the incompatible uses section, and that they should request a variance for this in some way if so. As a recommended condition of preliminary plat approval, again, I would like for them to be required to submit a final landscaping plan for planning staff review and approval prior to preliminary plat approval by the hearing examiner. I'm almost wrapped up. Just a couple more items. Reviewing the critical areas ordinance, Thurston County Code Section 24. There are 2 types of habitat conservation areas mapped on the site that are regulated per Thurston County Code in the gopher soils and prairie soils. The project provided a pocket gopher and Thurston County regulated prairie absence report, and that was reviewed and accepted by Thurston County staff on the lack of gophers and prairie plants on the site. So staff believes that no mitigating measures are required at this time if the project adheres to the impervious surface limits, planting requirements, and if the preliminary plat is approved by the hearing examiner. So I have my list of department recommendations if the hearing examiner grants approval of the preliminary plat. I've already gone over them in my sectional breakdown of the items that I still would need to review and approve, including a landscaping plan, impervious surface calculations, and driveway and parking areas, which fit into that impervious surface calculations. And I believe that's it for my testimony at the moment, unless there are any questions.
Just a couple of first housekeeping questions. I've got attached to the staff report at B2, there's a parcel check map. I'm unfamiliar with this document. It's not something I typically see. Can you just explain what it is and why it's needed in the record?
Let me take a look at that. I don't have a full copy of the staff report in front of me. I think that is not something that I review. I think that's maybe for addressing or for the final map plapping with the assessor's office or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it calls out 8 lots, and I know 8 lots are no longer proposed. So I'm just confused about its inclusion. I don't know what I'm supposed to get from it, if anything.
Oh, I see. Good question. My answer is I don't know, and I was under the impression that we needed to attach everything that was provided for the application, so that's why it's in there.
Okay. All right. Just so you know, I don't see anything in there that I can use or that I'm going to be relying on to decide the applications. So okay. If I'm missing something, I'm asking you to let me know.
I will look into that and let you know if there's something important within that that okay. either of us need to be looking at.
And then also, where did it go? 1 second, please. At attachment D, which I have lost somehow, there's a bulk submittals cover sheet.
Yes.
I don't know what that's for either.
That's essentially to show what was provided on that date, which was the bulk of resubmittals that were the latest submittals in most cases, just to iron out any confusion on what was submitted when.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Regarding the school situation, thank you for your analysis on schools. Do we know whether children will be bused or whether we're within a walk radius of any of those schools?
Not a walk radius from my analysis. I spoke with the representative of the Rochester schools, and they said that there is a bus route that goes through there, but I have not had any communications with the applicant on that note.
Okay.
And there wasn't anything in these design guidelines that required them to have any sort of bus waiting location on the corner or anywhere near there. So I'm not sure on that.
I just wanted to know if we know. It sounds like that students will be bused. They're expected to be bused.
Yes.
Do I understand from your testimony and the staff report that it is planning's position that the project must demonstrate per lot impervious surface coverage and the landscaping, those things can be required as conditions of approval, or do I need to look at them before I can determine whether they can comply with code?
I think that we all need to look at them. I need to look at them for planning to ensure that they can meet the requirements. And therefore, I think that you should look at them as well to base your decision on that.
All right. Just making sure I understand whether you're asking them to be imposed as conditions or whether you think they need pre-review. I think I have a series of questions for Public Works at this point. Ms. Garner, is there anything else you want to bring to my attention?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We can ask the Public Works representative to unmute and introduce himself so I can swear him in.
Yes, I'm Arthur Saint with the Thurston County Public Works Department.
And Mr. Saint, would you just spell your name for the record?
Sure, Arthursaint.
Thank you very much. And if I could ask you to raise your right hand, do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Saint. In the exhibits list, there's a request for a road standards variance. Have you reviewed that?
Yes, that was to reduce the road size from the standard public road section normally required in the Grand Mound area. It was to reduce it down to what they ended up with, a 20-foot paved road with curb, gutter, sidewalk, and street lighting.
And that's along the frontage on 198th?
No, that's internally. On the frontage, they'll be constructing the full standard roadway section.
All right. Question about the road standard for the internal road. Obviously, that's a private road, not a public road.
Yes.
Is that public? Is that road variance something that has been administratively approved, or is that before me for a decision?
That's already been administratively approved. Road standards variances are through the county engineer.
Just wanted to have that stated for the record. So the internal road section is 20 feet, you said?
Yes.
And then is it a 5-foot sidewalk along the west side of that road?
Yes. Let me go to the cross section. Yes, a 5-foot sidewalk.
Are there the variance that's been the zoning variance that's been requested regarding the setback of the existing residence? My understanding is that the eave of the house is going to protrude to the point where the applicants have requested a zero setback. In other words, the eave is going to touch the edge, the back edge of the sidewalk. Are there no safety concerns with the structure being placed that close to a private roadway?
No, not that I'm aware of, no. They'd be behind the curb, so it shouldn't be a clear zone issue. Because there is a curb on that side, so.
I'm just not that familiar with projects where the residence is 2 feet. The structure, the wall is 2 feet, and the eave is actually at the back of sidewalk. That's allowed?
With a variance, yeah. I've never seen one that close either, honestly.
But there are no safety concerns based on its closeness?
No.
And is that because of the volume of the traffic?
That there's no safety concern?
Yeah.
It'd be a combined factor. Mainly, there's a curb, so that should prevent. It's going to be a low speed road, obviously, because it's going to be very narrow.
Yeah.
And there's a curb, so that should provide for that protection.
All right. Thank you. That's I think I understand where you're coming from when you say there's not a safety concern for your department. Is there not a entering and exiting site distance issue with the residents being that close?
There will be distance to see. There's the sidewalk and the sidewalk will be there, so they'll be able to see that. It's on the side it's on. They should see the traffic coming. And then the next lot over is quite a distance from the house, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. Thank you.
The first lot is quite long compared to the rest, so that the structure, the existing structure is quite a ways before you get to that next lot.
Got it. So the setback from 198th is deep enough that there will be.
Oh yeah, it shouldn't be an issue with 198th.
Okay.
The area that's very close to the sidewalk is like 60 feet in off of 198th, and then 34 feet it looks like before the next property line.
Okay.
So it shouldn't be a site distance hazard for the driveways.
Got it. Good. Thank you for walking through that with me. Could you provide a high level overview of the drainage proposed and your review of it?
That was actually reviewed by our stormwater utility.
Oh.
I do not recollect the drainage proposed for this project.
All right. Well,
I believe the road had internal collection and infiltration underneath the road itself, and then the individual lots would have drywells, I would imagine. But I don't recall exactly what the report said.
All right. So you did not review this project for compliance with the drainage standards?
No, our stormwater department did.
Okay.
And there were no concerns at all that this could meet our drainage manual.
Thank you. I don't have anything else. Anything else from you, Mr. Saint?
No, not at this time.
Thanks very much. Ms. Peebles, thank you for being here. Did you have any testimony on this item?
Not at this time, although I'm happy to answer any questions.
Appreciate it. Thank you. With that, I'm ready to hear from the applicants. Sir, if you would introduce yourself for the record by stating and spelling your name, and then give us the name of your relationship to the case.
My name is Aaron Fuller. That is A-A-R-O-N, F-U-L-L-E-R. I am the project engineer and representative for the project.
Thank you very much. If I could ask you to raise your right hand to take the oath. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Mr. Fuller, please go ahead.
All right, so I agree with pretty much everything that was said on the public side there. what was it? This project did go through a multitude of changes early on and kind of landed on this. One of the things, we did want an eighth lot originally. Based on the size of that larger lot in the front, you can almost get another lot out of it, but due to the placement of the existing home, it created some lot size issues that would require a couple lots to go below the minimum requirements. So we lost that eighth lot, and we made that existing lot bigger. Also, the variance, just the placement of the existing home is about 30 feet from the eave directly to the eastern property line. So just right in that area, we wanted to reduce the easement and the setback in there, just to basically scooch by the edge of that existing garage. This is actually done multiple places, especially like in commercial settings where you actually have zero lot line setbacks, and the eave of the business especially would go out into the sidewalk to cover people normally. This is an extremely low volume road, so we do expect just local traffic for these seven lots on this road, maybe some visitors here. So extremely low, 20 miles an hour or less. And that eave is actually up at about 10 feet. So you have to be pretty tall to bump your head if you're walking on the sidewalk. So I don't believe that there, from an engineering perspective or a safety compliance perspective, I do agree with Arthur that there's no concern that I have personally on it. We are working on a landscape plan revision. I think that the only thing was like one of those trees that was provided up at 98th was a little bit bigger than 1 foot at full growth. So we were just going to remove that tree and actually show the vision triangle there at the corner of 198th and Rudy Lane is what we're calling this right now. The intersection at 200th, like I said, lot 7 is not a corner lot, so typically wouldn't see that standard. There's some on the internal side of that curve, there's some trees shown in there. On an intersection, the intent of a site vision triangle is to look through it if there's a stopping and then a pulling out movement that crosses traffic. That's why at the 198th, you've got oncoming traffic. And if you were going to cross that oncoming traffic, you'd want to see it coming first. At the intersection of 200th and Rudy Lane, there's no turning movement that would happen to cross traffic there, other than obviously pulling out of lot 7 driveway onto Rudy Lane. Again, this is an extremely low volume, low speed road. I've been out there multiple times. I don't think I've ever seen anybody other than parking on 200th Street. It's basically overflow parking for that lot just on the corner of 200th and Tamarack is what it ends up being. Let me see. I would suspect that we may have some parking that happens out there as well. And we're anticipating that. I'm going to try to stripe that as no parking there. What was it? I did send an email this morning to Ms. Gardner. I'm hoping that it can be forwarded to you. I kind of wrote a developer response to the conditions and the analysis there. For the most part, we concur with everything that was said. We agree that, you know, an updated landscaping plan should be provided. However, the breadth of it is really kind of our thing. There is the landscaping, the intent of this development is to have the existing lot, take it off of well and septic, put it onto more urban services, provide the access, water, sewer, sidewalks, all that, the major development, and then split off the other lots. Those lots then could be sold to an end user who would eventually pick out their own building and landscaping and lot arrangement. One of the things that I've been talking about doing during the final design of this project is changing that curb on the west side to more of a rolled curb instead of an actual elevated curb. That way that the end user could place their driveway at any point and wouldn't require a, you know, cut out of the sidewalk. Basically just making it more, just putting the access and the utilities and the services all available where it's okay, just pick out your building and we'll build it. With that said, I think the intent is also, you know, all the aesthetics, including the landscaping, would be picked out by that end user. And so our intent is really to just landscape lot one and pretty that up. And that's what we're really focused on with the landscaping plan. And then obviously the landscaping individually for lots 2 through 7 would come later. We think that also like irrigation connections, obviously you don't want to connect irrigations to say lot one for the entire development. And so we want to kind of segregate that off a little bit. So it's all eventually that there's no ownership issues at the very end. Let me see here. What was the other thing? The impervious surface, it's kind of an interesting subject. Again, we don't have, you know, buildings proposed. We've essentially made the lot work with its size. And so it meets minimum requirements for the size. And kind of the common knowledge is that if we meet the size, that it can also meet the impervious area requirements for the threshold. In this zone, 60% is the threshold for impervious area. And kind of going down through it is the smallest lot is about 8,625 square feet, so 8,625 square feet. And 60% of that area would be 5,175 square feet. Since this is a private road, Rudy Lane does take up a portion of each of these lots. That road is impervious, as well as the sidewalk and the curb. And that takes up 25 feet of the depth of the lot. So the full width and the depth of the lot. So that's about 1,875 square feet of private road area per lot that's already proposed on the lot. And so the difference between those two would be the amount of more impervious that could be placed on the lot without exceeding that 60% value, which is roughly 3,300 square feet. So between a modest home as well as a driveway, we feel that that could easily be achieved there. And just to put things in reference, lots 2 through 7, the building envelope that's established on each one of these lots is roughly 65 feet wide by 50 foot deep, or 3,250 square feet. So that means that entire building envelope could be filled by impervious area and still not exceed the 60% threshold. So I don't think that we're going to be anywhere close to that. I think the intent of this development is to have houses roughly the same square footage as the, or the footprint at least. It might go multiple stories, but at least the same footprint as the existing building up in front, which is roughly 1,600 square feet and is going to have a 400 square foot driveway. So about 2,000 feet. With that said, I believe on page 75 of Appendix F, which was the drainage report, there is a an overall site plan that has lot allowances for impervious area. The communal drainage facility is out in the middle. It's an inverted crown road, and there's multiple points where catch basins pick up the water and then treat it through a filtering system, and then it goes into an underground infiltration system. That communal system actually had the existing impervious area on the lot one accounted for, as well as 2,000 square feet per lot, or a total of 12,000 new square feet that are incorporated into that drainage design. So with that said, the homes typically don't contribute their roof runoff to the communal system. There's typically like a infiltrator or under an individualized infiltrator type system on each individual lot that takes care of just the roof runoff. And that's because roof runoff does not need to be treated. So they tend to keep those separate. So we do anticipate some of that happening on each lot, but since no buildings are proposed at this time, we'd like to defer that. We also think that 2,000 square feet per lot is more than adequate for the driveways, a couple of sidewalks, whatever would be contributing to the communal system. That's all accounted for in that in the actual drainage design. So, like I said, I believe that the lot meets minimum size standards, and just by that fact, we feel that it can meet any kind of impervious area standards that would be proposed in the future. I just really like to shy away from speculating on what a future property owner might propose on these lots. You know, our intent is just to subdivide and then leave it open for an eventual property owner to buy and develop on their own. Let me see here. I don't know, to go down through it, let me see here. We agree that the set, basically we're asking for a reduced right-of-way, reduced cross-section to the road standard, and then also the zoning for the setback as well there. What was the other one here? Okay, so the landscaping and screening, there was a lot of talk recently about this incompatible use. We agree that the incompatible use is that this project meets the definition on the west and south side, actually, because we are creating lots that are less than 50% of the square footage of the adjacent lot. However, in the staff report, there was a copy of the code here. Let me find it here. Sorry, I was up late last night looking at this. I believe it's on page 7. There was a copy of this code, and I believe section, I'm sorry, give me a second here. Okay, code 2045060 identifies that this project is an incompatible use and meets the definition as provided in subsection 1 of that same code. However, subsection 2, when it was identified here, and I believe, yes, this is on page 7 of the staff report, the applicability section of that same code, and they only copied item C into that code under applicability. So 2C was copied in, but 2A and 2B were not copied in, which are the exception criteria from that code. In section 2B, single family homes are exempt from incompatibility and this entire section 2045060. And so since we are proposing single family homes along this, we don't feel that this project is exempt from this code. However, as you said, we can probably work through some kind of additional screening if that's necessary. But like I said, I think we're exempt from this code. It actually says in section 2B that single family homes, existing non-conforming uses, and properties that are separated by a public right-of-way are exempt from 2045060. So I believe that was why we didn't provide a bigger buffer initially. Let me see here. When it comes to the conditions of approval, items 1 through 41 in the staff report are fairly generic in nature. I would say that they're a bit cut and paste from some of the earlier comments. Some of these have already been taken care of on the current plans that you're seeing in front of you. There's also some grammatical errors in there, like they're talking about, you know, attachments that wouldn't be provided in conditions of approval. Let me see here. You could actually look at items 30 and 32 reference things that maybe shouldn't be listed as, hey, we're going to attach like a sheet for the, the fees that are attached to the project. I don't know if we need to actually list that there. Also, items 27 and 30 refer to 8 lots still, so they would just change that to 7. I guess I suggest that we go through items 1 through 41 to see, just kind of clean it up a little bit. But they're, like I said, they're generic in nature, so we don't really have any problems with that. The one that we do have is item 4, I guess, in there. It's generic in nature. It's a very boilerplate DOE response that we have to get a construction general stormwater permit. This project is more than an acre, so it meets the size requirements for a construction general permit. However, we're not planning to discharge to surface waters. That's really the intent, is to monitor surface water discharge to make sure we're not increasing turbidity or anything like that. We are infiltrating on site, so no stormwater is going to leave the site in our during construction or during the final portions of the project. And so as such, it doesn't need that that general permit. So we're not intending to get that right now. I think that's fairly certain. Item 42, I believe, is requesting a bunch of discussion on impervious surfaces. I believe on page 2, we threw some rough assumptions on the actual plans itself in the last section. Yes, there's provided areas kind of like just adjacent to the vicinity map on page 2 of the current plans. And it does show that proposed buildings, 12,000 square feet. It has asphalt and sidewalk. So there's a bunch of it. Driveways. It has XXX in there, but really what it is the buildings and everything are we just put 12,000 as a plug number, so 2,000 per lot for the 6 lots that are behind the existing one. Let me see here. That would include the, like I said, the driveways and the buildings. Let me see here. Items 42 and 44 we concur with. Item 45, we were talking, we intend to provide a landscaping plan for lot 1, which will maintain its existing structure, we are going to show the vision triangle out there on 198th and remove it. I believe that there's one tree that was obstructing some view there. But we do request that lots 2 through 7 can be deferred and actually allowed to subdivide the property, and that those can be picked up at time of building application for each individual lot. I think that is more intent with the type of construction that, you know, we'd like to do. Also, item 46, they talk about construction of all landscaping before, final platting. We do, like I said, we do want to split these properties and then have each property owner build their own landscaping. I'd actually like to build the landscaping on each of these lots after the building is constructed. That way, you know, it's sometimes it can be difficult. You put the flowers in the front of the house and they have to build the house behind them. So it's just, like I said, it's a construction sequencing issue there. And like I say, I think, you know, the intent here really is to subdivide the property and build the major access and utilities for the project to get it ready for home construction for that individual user. So I guess when conditioning this project, let's just kind of use some common sense there. That's all I ask. So, I think that was it on my side. But like I said, we concur with 85% of everything that was said in the staff report. And that's all I had.
All right, great. I do have some questions for you. I understand that you're not planning to build these residences, but can you speak to how each of the six smaller lots will meet driveway and parking requirements?
Yeah, so like I said, we're trying to build, I'm going to change that vertical curb on the sidewalk to a rolled curb so you can pretty much drive over it in multiple places. And that way the driveway can be positioned either at the north or south end of the lot, whatever building plan you do. We would expect that each driveway would be roughly 15 to 20 foot wide to provide 1 to 2 parking stalls in the actual driveway. And then we would suspect at least one vehicle parking in garage on each property. So we do expect somewhere between, you know, 1600 and 2000 square feet for each building footprint. Like I said, that these could go multiple stories, but maybe another 400 to 500 square foot of driveway that would just, you know, come perpendicular off of each lot. I do have a kind of a rough description, and it's really based on utility placement. If you look at the utility plan, I believe it is second to last sheet or page 11 of the plans, we kind of hopscotch between property lines. We have kind of a double water meter and then a double sewer and then a double water. So each water and sewer is separated on each lot. And so they would need to basically navigate those utility placements with their driveway. I don't think most people like having, you know, a water meter right in the middle of their driveway. So they probably just place it around that. So we try to pick the best way to serve everything, but I think from an engineering perspective, it's a very straightforward project. Sometimes from planning and discussions, they're trying to snake around an existing facility to get a road in can be a little difficult. And that's, like I said, that's why we're asking for the variance.
All right. For the sake of conversation, we'll assume that your argument that the incompatible use buffer doesn't apply is persuasive. Assuming I agree with you, let's look at the landscape plan. It shows landscaping along the rear of the lots. How wide is that strip along the rears of the lots?
That's 5 feet right now. That's basically between the building setback and property. That's okay. A standard building setback.
Assuming the building is set that far back. We don't know where the building
is. Yeah, we don't know where the building, those squares in the middle are just building envelopes. Like I said, we don't know.
Got it. And then, so does that mean that the strip along the other, what is that? Can't ever remember which way is north on this plan.
Yeah, north is, you can actually for vernacular, you know, up, left, right, down, line two. I've got it here.
It's also 5 feet on the other side lot line then, right? The landscape strip, yeah, on the outside of the road.
Yeah, that's the clear area that's between the edge of the road and the the down property line.
Okay. So you're planting trees in those 5 foot wide strips?
They're more shrubs there. You can see like up by the frontage on 198, those bigger circles, those are more trees. And you can see the tree that's closest to that, the curb return there, probably needs to be removed just to meet that vision clearance triangle thing. So those little shrub plants are, like I said, just kind of just break up the stuff between the road and the down property line there. So not big trees.
Okay. The sidewalk along the entire roadway is 5 feet long for the whole width?
Yes. Five feet wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We did have to switch sides down there. Trying to go around this corner and stay within the property lines, we did have to meander the road just slightly in the property right away to make that turn, like I said, and keep everything on our property. So that's why we did that. And we just wanted to, we had a nice wider area there, so we wanted to kind of pretty it up.
You had said that in the current condition before your project, there is the other development that you abut uses that 200th extension for parking, and that you were thinking about striping it?
Well, that's one thing that I noticed, that the house, the existing house below ours there on the landscaping plan right there, in the corner lot there, there was a couple of cars parked over there multiple times when I've gone out to the site today. So I don't want to perpetuate that. I want to keep that open.
Okay, I misunderstood you. I thought you said you were going to stripe it for parking, but you mean you intend for it to be a through road, and so there wouldn't be any parking there.
Yeah, I don't want cars sitting there, and so someone comes around the corner and they've got a parked car right in the middle of the road.
Yeah. So, the two travel lanes in your private road are 10 feet wide each. There's no parking along your private road.
No parking along the road.
Okay. So moving topics, the house that you are attempting to preserve on lot one, how old is that structure?
I'm not sure. Hey, Ryan, if you're online and you know, maybe you can speak to that real quick. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. That's fine. I don't know.
That's fine. Mr. Deskins, do you want to unmute and testify? I'd like to have you introduce yourself for the record. You're still muted. Little microphone. There you go.
Yeah, sorry, I was clicking on a link to find the age of the house. Ryan Deskins, R-Y-A-N.
Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were going to spell your name, but that's fine. Did you find out how old the house is?
1 minute. I think it's 1970s, and I know. Look on the county record right now.
I'm just curious about why you'd prefer to save the house rather than get rid of it. I mean, it would give you an eighth lot potentially if you did get rid of the house.
Yeah, structure is in need of remodel for sure. So we were going to remodel at the time, and it just seemed, you know, tear down a perfectly good house, though, just to rebuild another house seemed like another additional expense in this project, which, you know, like all things, projects got to come in at budget, which is this one's wildly over. So just trying to make it viable.
Okay.
And I think that's my one concern as I look this house up real quick is, you know, just looking at, you know, all the design features and kind of the cost of construction. Like, we don't even know if this project will be approved or if it will happen or not happen. And then yet we're designing really intricate details to where on the house side, where each shrub goes and everything. When you go to get a building permit, all that has to be approved. So for me, an outsider looking into your guys' process, I'm a little bit confused. I'm like, wow. I mean, we're spending a lot of time and money on things that have to be right. We've already predetermined in county code what minimum lot size is, and if the lot size matches and those surfaces have to be right in parking. So this is just me on the outside looking into your process. You guys do this every day, and you have to excuse me, but sometimes I'm like, whoa, because we're spending enormous amounts of time and energy and money to do that, you know, so.
Understood.
1986 is the answer.
Oh, 86. Okay. Yeah. So it was basically attempting to keep costs down was the reason why to not remove the structure.
Yes.
All right.
It seemed, you know, in an effort not to sound ignorant, if you just look across the property line and look at the houses across the property line and look over, you can just kind of see how that, you know, I just went clink, clink, clink. That looks like it works and matches what is currently being built in the area. And we could wipe that out, but we wouldn't get those lots anyways, I don't think. It's still up for it's still up for debate, I guess. I mean, if worst case scenario, we'll either lop the garage off or lop the whole house down. So.
All right.
It's not what I want to see happen, though.
Understood. I assume you've designed it the way you hope that it gets approved.
I'm heavy on the approval part.
All right. Anything else from either you, Mr. Deskins, or you, Mr. Fuller, regarding arguments on the incompatible use buffer, Thurston County Code 2045-0602. Mr. Fuller has argued that it's exempt under 2B. I'm not 100% sure I agree. So any more argument on that?
Yeah, let me see if I can just jump in and read the code. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to Google it here. So I'm just looking up Thurston County Municipal. Oop, that's building codes. I don't want building codes. I want municipal codes. What was it? 2045-060, item 2B. If you have it in front of you too, I mean, okay. Yeah, I just, let me see here. 2B. So I believe, I do that. Landscaping and screening, 45, 70, 60, incompatible uses, here you go. Yeah, so 2B, individual single family residences, existing legal non-conforming uses, and property separated by a public road are exempt from the requirements of 2045-060. So, I mean, it's very common in, you know, code language to exempt single family homes from a lot of things that, you know, maybe a commercial or a multifamily development would need to adhere to. This is a compatible use within the area. I believe that, you know, most of these properties will go to this. Obviously everything to the east is done and is this way. And I think that the intent is to continue this way. Like I said, it's single family homes. At one point we were thinking about duplexes. Obviously that would require an incompatible use. But at the same time too, you know, like Lacey said, we can do a variance to say that this is appropriate. I look at it as there's three scenarios right here. Item 2B, single family residences, existing non-conforming uses, and properties separated by a public road would be exempt from this code. And like I said, we met one of those three, being a single family home proposed project. I would think that if you would like to list that as a condition that single family homes have to go on these lots, then that's a fair condition to make sure that we comply with that.
All right. I think the only other topic I had as a question for you was to provide a little bit more information about stormwater management. There's gonna be a treatment facility that will discharge to an infiltration trench underneath the road, is that right?
Yes, let me see if I can find the exact plan for you. If you pull up the plans, there is, I believe, page page six of the plans, or C2.3 at the bottom there. And so where it goes is, you can see that there's right down the middle of the road, and there's this kind of cross-hatched little width thing there. And then there's multiple catch basins down in the middle of the road. So this road is inverted crown. That means basically everything flows to the center of the road, and then it flows to these catch basins that are down the middle of the road. Those catch basins have a specialized filter in them. They're called a context system, or there's been some newer technology out there. I do plan on maybe having a bay filter system. That it's just a proprietary type system. That is the treatment component of the system. And then it flows into an underground, basically perforated pipe trench, or down in a trench. And that trench is filled in with drain rock, and the size of the trench and the length of the trench are modeled based on the impervious areas given, as well as the pervious areas. Basically, the whole project infiltrates onto the site. Also, there's a secondary system. We were required to pick up half of the 198th way out on the frontage, and we created a separate basin. And so there is a two catch basin system out there with another small infiltration trench that works in a very similar fashion. And that is on lot one, just behind the right of way there. So we're picking that up as well. So,
okay.
So, and that is out there by, you can actually see CB4, and it's note number four that's out there, I guess, kind of by the northwest corner of the property there.
Yes.
That catch basin will pick up the frontage there. And and then it just brings it back behind the sidewalk and infiltrates it down into the ground there. That there is a little treatment system there as well. That was all sized in accordance with the drainage manual from Thurston County. And I believe, like Arthur said, I don't think that there's any major concerns. I think during final approval, we might, you know, have to massage something back and forth, but there's nothing majorly that would need to be changed.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thanks for walking me through it.
You're welcome.
I don't have other questions. Is there anything else that you, Mr. Fuller, or you, Mr. Deskins, want to say now before we go for public comment?
I do not.
I do not. I mean, I'll go back to this situation with the house situation, and it makes it sound it's all about money, but it seemed like a perfectly good house, and it's senseless to knock it down. And it seemed, you know, like a fair amount of space to get by, obviously. Obviously, we can remodel and possibly redo that garage even increase if we want, but it just seemed like a logical thing is why the decision was made. It wasn't purely money, but we'd surely like to see this project done. There's not a lot of new construction, new housing in the area. I think there's a need for housing in the area, and I think that it just continually shows us that. There's only 7 houses for sale in the whole area now. And so I think it's a good project, needs to be done, and supports our community. So I'd love to see it happen.
Thank you. We're going to go now for public comment. Ms. Stoker, can you help me find out? Is there any member of the public who wants to provide testimony?
It looks like only senior planner Sharon Lump and Tobin is listening, so that would be no.
Nope. All right. Then let me go back to county staff, because we'll have final comments from county staff and then final comments from the applicant. Ms. Garner, did you have any response to the testimony by the applicant?
Yes, I do. I have several things I would like to add in response. Firstly, I would just like to point out, well, a couple of things in the staff report, especially when other agencies provide comments, it is standard practice for planning to just repeat those in staff reports for the record and for the applicant to know what's in there. So it is exactly copying and pasting in many respects. And back to the a section that I commented on, I just want to point out a section of Thurston County Code. I call it out on page 4 regarding the setback and the variance request. Section 20.07.050, reduction in yard requirements, Item number four says minimum setback. No portion of any structure over 30 inches above finished grade shall be closer than 2 feet from any property line. So I think that's a pretty strong statement that needs to be, that planning review has been going off of here. I would also like to point out.
Just a question to clarify that. So does that mean that, in your opinion, they can't get a variance from that provision as well?
No, because then you go on to number seven and it says hearing examiner variance. Variance is not allowed by administrative action in this section may be granted pursuant to chapter 20.52, which I do copy in here, I believe. On yes, I do. Page 8 goes through that entire section of code.
Yes.
So I would need to reread that, which I won't take the time to do right this minute. So I'm not sure, Examiner Rice, to answer your question.
Okay.
I'm not sure on that.
Okay.
But going to the incompatible use interpretation of code, the reason I didn't put that in this section is because that is the way that Mr. Fuller interpreted that section of code is not how Thurston County planners interpret that section of code. The verb or operative word in that statement is separated. So, and I agree, this it isn't written very well. It's fairly confusing. Again, I'm referring to in Thurston County Code section 20.45.0602B. So when looking at this sentence and breaking it down grammatically, the operative word again is separated. So it's not saying individual single family residences are exempt. It's not saying the other items, it's not saying a handful of items are exempt. It's saying all those items together that are separated by a public road are exempt. So separated by a public road is the planning's interpretation of that section. And there is no separation by a public road for this subdivision. Therefore, that does not apply. And therefore, I didn't include it in the staff report. Let's see here. And just on to Mr. Fuller's, you know, explanation in depth about, you know, referring back to the drainage report for impervious surface calculations. Again, that's not a report that planning reviews. And so that's not something I would have found. And it's the responsibility of the applicant to prove that a proposal can happen and happen per all the requirements of code. And so that's why it's been, I think, one reason why this project has gone on so long is that there's all of these items are required on every single project. And so that's all I've been asking for is just please prove it. Please show these numbers on the site plan. Please show that you can meet it. And so the expectation and the understanding for how the applicant proposes to develop this property or not develop it, but just divide it. I mean, I think that's very common. I think it's very common for applicants to just want to divide it and let people or folks that buy the individual lots develop it themselves. That's very common. But it's also very common that you still have to prove that these lots are buildable by Thurston County Code at the front end in this current phase. And so I just want to point out that is the responsibility of the applicant to prove it by showing these things on the plans, at least from the planning perspective. They don't have to be exactly where driveways are going to go, for example. They can be a general location just to prove that the size requirement for the driveway can be located on this and you can meet the incompatible use 30-foot buffer and you can meet all these other things. I think that's the part I'm having a hard time just evaluating, because their responses to all of my requests in the most part have been through emails and long emails with paragraphs of why, you know, how this fits. And it would just be much easier if the requirements were on the plans as requested. One more thing. I mean, I guess this isn't necessarily my item to question because I don't know the difference in safety between a rolled curb and a regular curb, but Arthur was saying earlier that the presence of the curb around that corner in regard to the variance request was a safety measure for that reduction in setback. And so that popped a question in my mind, is that a concern if that curb is now proposed to be a rolled curb? But that's not my area of expertise. Lastly, I just want to point out that there's not a lot of landscaping requirements for this project, for this zoning. And so when Mr. Fuller was referring to planting flowers or shrubs and such, there's not a lot of requirements. There has to be clear corners. And again, there's that incompatible use buffer, vegetation buffer. And that's primarily it. There's no number of trees, there's no number of and there are a lot of items to check in the landscaping guidelines, but I just want to look back at that and say that as far as strong requirements go for trees and such, there's only the vegetation buffer. And so
the incompatible use buffer?
Yes. Yes.
And then the vision clearance triangles.
Yes, those are the primary items. And I think that is all that I have for now. I agree that internal corner now, as Mr. Fuller has explained it, that's not a corner of concern for the very reasons he's stated. So I agree with that. And I think that's all I have for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's do check in with Mr. Saint. Is there an issue? You had previously said that a vertical curb would be a safety protection if the variance is approved. If it's a rolled curb, does that affect your analysis?
It does. The variance requested had vertical curb, so there is no, we have not approved any rolled edge, and it would be a safety concern for that structure.
Okay.
The Grand Mound standards do dictate a vertical curb.
Would the applicant, is there a process by which the applicant would be able to request rolled curbs for lots 2 through 7?
They could request a variance through the construction review.
Okay, and that would be decided by your department administrator?
Yes, it would.
Thank you for clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it for the county. Final thoughts from Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, sorry, maybe I misspoke there. I do believe that we can leave it a vertical curb through lot 1 just to provide some additional protection. Lots 2 through 7, I would like to, like I said, I don't know where driveways are going to be placed exactly, and I don't want a bunch of rework with that sidewalk and, you know, having to suppress curbs and everything and come back and saw cut out brand new construction. So I do think that, yeah, we would just transition once we got past lot 1. Back to a rolled curb. I think that's the intent. So I'll just work with Mr. Saint after this to make sure everything's copacetic there. That being said, I really do want to figure out this buffer. I agree. A 30-foot buffer on that backside is gonna, you know, really, it's gonna take another 25 foot of building envelope. I don't think that's the intent of the zoning when they say 5-foot setback. I don't think that's the intent of this code. I think the intent of this code is to exempt certain single family type residences and things that are, I guess, minor impacted, you know, like, you know, commercial and multifamily and a lot of stuff with that you don't want to see from your adjacent incompatible residents, right? Seeing another residence next to your residence typically is more in line with I think that the intent of the incompatible use code is to have those three exemptions. I think separated by a public road is just an additional concern there. So with that said, I do want to figure this out like fairly quickly, like what the intent here is moving forward, because at this point, I think it's my time right now to request a variance to the standard. Regardless, so if you're going to rule that single family homes are not exempt per this code, then we would request a variance. If it is exempt, then I don't think that there's a need to request a variance. So I guess work that into your judgment one way or the other. If the intent, like what I say is, if we really need to, there is a backup plan. My landscape architect has been saying that, you know, we can provide a fence you know, instead of, you know, some landscaping, like a, maybe a 6 foot high, you know, opaque cedar fence with maybe another 1 foot, you know, little thing. Like I said, I don't want to offer that if we don't have to, but if needed, that's a good medium meet there, I guess, meet in the middle kind of thing. So.
Okay. Let me just ask Ms. Garner a question. Is a variance from the incompatible use buffer the type of application that would require official application and notice?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I can follow up on that, however, just to be certain.
Okay. Do you want to hold the record open to respond to that, or?
Yes, please. I would. I want to get, I haven't dealt with a variance request on this matter before, so I would like to get a strong, correct answer to that.
So what we will do is allow Ms. Garner to submit the department's position as to whether or not a variance from the incompatible use buffer standard requires application and notice of application. And once she submits that department position, the applicant will have the right to respond to that because it's the applicant's burden. So we'll, Ms. Garner, do you think you can do that within the 2 business days for post-hearing comment?
Absolutely, I'll do that today if I can.
Sure, and then if I could get a response from it to it from you within 2 business days, will that also work?
I'm sorry, were you talking to me?
Sort of, yeah. Ms. Garner is going to submit a department position on whether or not the variance from the incompatible use buffer requires official application and notice of application.
Yeah, I would be happy. I guess it's more concerning. I'm more interested in your, I guess, what your ruling is going to be. If the department can have any position it wants, just like I can, I guess what it is you're kind of the media breaker. If we're not going to be relieved or exempt from it, then I definitely can. So whatever you need me to do in the next 2 days.
I'm just offering you the opportunity. She's going to submit something in writing after the close of the hearing. And because you are the applicant, you have the right to have the last word in the proceeding. So I'm offering you an opportunity to respond to what she submits in writing.
Yeah, of course. I can do that within a few hours of receiving it. So I don't think you need to hold it open for more.
That's what we'll do. So the record is going to be held. 1 second, Mr. Deskins, I'll hear from you. But just to clarify, the record will be held open for the 2 business days for post-hearing comment. And I can get Ms. Garner's response and Mr. Fuller's response within that 2 days or within the following 2 days, then we won't need to extend the decision issuance deadline. So within those 4 business days, if I hear from both of you, there's no need to extend the decision issuance deadline.
10-4.
Okay, great. Mr. Deskins, please go ahead.
Could someone clarify to me the problem with this buffer setback? I know this sounds crazy. I'd like it to be clarified. I mean, before we try to solve a problem, we're trying to clarify what exactly. Maybe Ms. Gardner can speak to that and just clarify it in plain English so I can understand.
I
know that's a crazy question, but it just seems, or I'd just like to hear, I've heard Aaron's side, I'd like to hear Ms. Gardner's side.
Well, she did testify about that already twice. In the department's position, the buffer applies to the property, and in your position, it doesn't. And it is my decision to decide which interpretation is correct. It's not my practice to announce my decision here. Mr. Fuller would like, I'm not gonna do that. I will be deciding it though in the written document.
Very well.
If you'd like to talk more with Ms. Garner about that, I'd like to have you do that probably off the record.
Okay, I'll do that.
And Ryan, I can follow up with you as well right after too, if you guys.
Yeah, it'd be great if we get on the phone. It'd be great. All right. So thank you, everybody. So again, we're going to hold the record open. I don't believe there's any specific documents other than these two that we have held the record open for. I think everything else is already here. So I am looking for a written submittal from Ms. Garner about the department's position as to whether or not an application for variance from the incompatible use buffer is the type of request that requires official application and notice of application. She's going to submit that as soon as she can within the next few hours or days. When she gets it to me, it'll also be sent to Mr. Fuller. Mr. Fuller, you guys will have a chance to respond in writing to that. Again, if I get that in the next few business days, there's no need to hold the record open beyond the schedule we've already agreed to. So the record is held open through the 27th for post-hearing written public comment from any members of the public who had technology problems joining the meeting. If there is no post-hearing comment, the record will close on the 27th, and that generates a decision deadline of May 11. If we do have post-hearing comment, you have 2 business days to respond. So your responses are due May 1, and the decision becomes due May 15. And if I hear from Ms. Garner and the applicants in response to Ms. Garner within the next 4 or so business days, there's no need to extend the record for that at all. If it's going to take longer than that, then I might want to reserve the right to issue on the 15th instead of the 11th, but I'm not going to go beyond that. So I'm going to, Ms. Garner?
Yes.
Scheduling?
Yes.
Any further comments?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure I understand the process for me to get this in writing to you. Yes. How should I go about that?
I believe Ms. Katie's out sick, and so if you're going to send it today, please send it via Ms. Stoker.
Will do.
And I want to make sure Ms. Stoker has the applicant's email addresses. If she doesn't, can you forward them to her?
I certainly will.
Okay, because I need her to forward the post-hearing schedule to them as well.
Sure.
And then when they respond, let's CC Ms. Katie on all these emails just in case she comes back before we're done. So Mr. Fuller, your post-hearing response to Ms. Garner should be sent to both Polly Stoker and Sonia Katie. It'll be just reply all on the email and it'll get everywhere it needs to go.
10-4.
Great. So again, I'm going to email this post-hearing schedule now to Ms. Stoker. She will forward it to you. If you have any questions, you can send procedural questions. You can send them by email to her. She'll get them to me. But otherwise, we should be clear. Those 2 documents, Ms. Garner's response to my question about whether or not incompatible use buffer variance requires official application and notice of application or not, and then applicant's response to that question are the only 2 documents the record is held open for in addition to public comment. Thanks very much, everybody, for your attention and your work on this matter. We are adjourned. I look forward to issuing you a decision by either May 11 or May 15.